Hey, everybody out there. I'm Rick Sanchez. So good to see you. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about.
What do foreign leaders or allies think of President Biden right now?
They don't think he can serve another 4 years.
Yeah, and it gets worse. That's pretty much the Biden report card right now from the NATO summit. It isn't good, especially after another bizarre gaffe. I'm Rick Sanchez. Get ready for a Direct Impact. Let's do it. You know, as I was watching some of these videos that we're going to be talking about, I thought to myself, you know, I've done this a couple times in my life. It's not that hard, right? It's not hard to do a toast. It's pretty simple, really, all things considered. For example, if you or I were hosting NATO leaders, we'd probably say something like, you know, here's to a better, more peaceful world, and may we continue working together to somehow try and achieve that, right? I mean, that's basically all you need to say. It's pretty easy, right? No. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's not easy for this guy, for the president of the United States, Mr. Joe Biden. In fact, here he goes again.
The allies in this room not only share a common language, don't share a common language, we do not share a common border, but we are neighbors. We're neighbors.
What? We don't speak the same language, but we do speak the same language, and we do have borders, but we don't, and we're... Look, did you notice what I noticed there, by the way? Did you see his head? His head was down the whole time. That means he was reading that. That means somebody had to write that for him, and God bless him, he still screwed it up, right? He also stumbled pronouncing the name of the country that he has paid way more attention to than even his own country, the United States. Watch here as he's speaking to all the world leaders and he forgets how to say Ukraine. And then watch, because we've got more video, he slow walks off the stage. Watch what they saw.
Destroy Ukraine's culture.
I've said this before, I hate having to play these videos, but he is the president of the United States, and it is what it is, and I'm not making it up. He did say, destroy Uranus. I mean, my goodness. So after watching that, what are the European leaders of NATO saying privately? Ian Bremmer is the president of the Eurasia Group. Usually a friend to Democrats, by the way, and no big peace hawk or no big peacemaker, more of a hawk. So he's paid to know the answer to what leaders are thinking of the president of the United States, and watch what he says.
What do foreign leaders or allies think of President Biden right now?
They don't think he can serve another 4 years. And I will say that is true of every leader that I have met with that's attending the NATO summit. Doesn't matter if they come from the right or the left wing of their respective political spectrums. This isn't news to them. They've reported this from the G7 summit. They talked about this when they met with the president in Normandy. It's not that they don't like him. In fact, they're deeply concerned.
That's pretty much the Biden news on this day. Manila, let me bring you in at this point for your commentary.
Oh, boy, Rick, all of that is just becoming more and more increasingly difficult to see, this kind of video. And like I said, at this point, I have to almost detach the way I think of Joe Biden as the president of our country and more as just a human. And this human is aging and declining rapidly right before our very eyes. And what Ian Bremmer is saying there, Ian Bremmer, for those who don't know, is a very well-respected in these Washington circles here, very well-respected think tank guy. He usually has his finger right on the pulse of what all the brains here in Washington are saying and what they're thinking. I tend to agree with what he says. The report card basically is from all of these different NATO leaders and all the people, the supporting figures. I think Ian Bremmer has nailed this one. And like you said, Rick, he ain't shy. He's not shy about what he thinks about Russia, especially in these last couple of years.
Yeah.
And this is where he's at, that it doesn't seem like Biden has any support from anybody anymore.
You know, the interesting part about all this is the timing could not have been more fascinating this week, really more ironic this week, because, you know, as these NATO leaders, right, are meeting to try and figure out how to divide the world a little more with threats against China and Russia and India and Iran and all the other countries that they think are bad, and they're all great, but they're all bad, whatever. One European leader is catching hell from those people for doing just the opposite, right? So Hungary's Viktor Orban this week thinks it's time to start a dialogue with Russia about ending the war in Ukraine. Probably not a bad idea, I think. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. So this guy goes out and he meets with the Russian President Putin to talk about just that. Here it is.
We need to take many steps to move towards ending the war. But the first important step we've taken today, restoring dialogue.
We're grateful to the Prime Minister for coming to Moscow. We see this as an attempt to restore dialogue and move it on.
So why is Orban doing this? By the way, he just spoke to Zelensky, too, so it's not like he's just going over to talk to President Putin. He's doing so as the president of the European Union Council. It's a rotating position. He's going to hold it for the next 6 months, then they're going to give it to some other leader. And what's the reaction from NATO after they saw what he did? And what's the reaction from the rest of the EU? Basically this. How dare you go and talk to Putin, you appeaser you. That's basically what, here it is. Here's the EU. Ursula von der Leyen tweeted this. Appeasement will not stop Putin, she tweets. Only unity and determination will do that. So wait, Manila. Here's what I'm seeing here, right? Let me get this right, right? So conversation, dialogue, and negotiations, bad. Threats, insults, war, good. Isn't that what she's saying? I mean, again, call me crazy.
You nailed it. It's like... Rick, you nailed it. You have learned to speak broadly this new European language of war. And that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's like upside down world that we're living in. In what world have we ever existed that dialogue is bad? Why is it bad that Orban is not only, you know, the president of Hungary, that is a neighboring country to Russia, but, you know, at the moment he is the sitting president of the council as it rotates the presidential seat.
Yeah,
he's in charge, but they made it very quickly the point to say he's there on his own as Hungary's president and not our group president at the moment. They wanted to distance themselves very quickly because Orban is talking about peace. The rest of the EU wants to talk about war,
right,
and death and destruction. And this is just the world that we're in now in 2024. Rick, I can't understand it. I can't unpack that for you any further. I don't understand.
Yeah, it's like many of us in this world are looking at this and just scratching our heads and saying, what in the hell are they talking about? What is wrong with having a conversation with a country about a peace deal? That's bad? Wow. Okay, before I let you go, and we get to our incredibly smart guest today, like you, by the way, it finally happened, Manila. A Democratic president has lost Hollywood. Yes, Hollywood elites are turning, and they're seeming to, you know, these guys have always backed the Democratic candidates, or for the most part, they've always backed Democratic candidates. I know LBJ was different and stuff like that because of the Vietnam War, but looky here at what just happened. George Clooney just announced on Twitter he's out, no longer a Biden supporter. Quote, he says or writes, it's devastating to say it, but the Joe Biden that I was with 3 weeks ago at the fundraiser was not the Joe effing deal, the big effing Joe, big effing, I don't even know what that means, but whatever, of 2010. He wasn't even the Joe Biden of 2020, he writes. He was the same man we all witnessed during the debate. So he's saying essentially that he now thinks that Joe Biden is a doddering old man who shouldn't be the president. And I do wonder as I watch this and I ask myself, then why didn't he say it then if he saw it then? Instead, he was trying to convince everybody he knows to give millions of dollars to the guy, and now he's saying, oops, take your money back, guys, I was wrong. What do you make of Clooney coming out and suddenly turning on Biden?
Well, a couple of points here, Rick. First, if I were Biden, I would say, A2 Brute, A2.
You too, Brutus?
Biden, yes. In this case, Joe Biden is Julius Caesar and Brutus is stabbing him in the back. And here is George Clooney as well as Barack Obama. Apparently, the two had been colluding behind the scenes before George Clooney put out that op-ed to New York Times where he goes into detail about why he's no longer supporting a Biden nomination. George Clooney has been a longtime Democrat Party man. I don't think it matters specifically who is in the seat, who's in the hot chair for the DNC ticket. He's just a DNC guy. And you know, Hollywood loves George Clooney. He's the number one leading man. Women swoon all around the world. And people are starting to float the idea that perhaps George Clooney should take over because he's got this long history of being political and humanitarian. And look at how beautiful the White House would look being represented by George Clooney and Amal, his wife, who is this, you know, international human rights attorney, you know, very well known, very well spoken. She's got that great British accent. So people are floating this idea abound in the past 24 hours. And it wouldn't be the first time that we've elected an actor to the Oval Office.
So,
Rick.
There was this guy, I think his name was Reagan, right? Ronald Reagan? Yeah.
That's right.
As I recall. George Clooney,
by the
president.
Way,
wow.
By the way, Rick, all that money that he hauled in, the biggest one-night fundraiser haul in presidential history is what I understand, almost $30 million in one night. All that money goes into the DNC coffers. It's not a Joe Biden thing. Like, here's $28 million, dollars,
it's
Joe
not,
Biden.
Yeah, right. It's for
they
the
get
party.
To keep it.
Well, I just recalled Shakespeare's famous line when he described Brutus sticking that dagger in Caesar's back. And it does remind me of what some might say in the Biden camp about what Clooney's doing now. It was called the unkindest cut of all. Remember? Literature?
Yes, that is
college?
Absolutely
right. Second year. Yeah. Professor
Ouch.
Thorpe. We're done. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend.
When we come back, we are going to take you to Beirut. International journalist, TV host, writer, commentator, Marwa Orhan. Osman is going to join us from what came to be known as the Paris of the Middle East. Please don't go away. She's good, she's smart, and she's going to be right back with us.
We need to counter the Russian state control narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez, and let me tell you a little bit about Marwa Osman. She is the host of Mideast Stream on Press TV. She writes about all types of world affairs with a special interest oftentimes and expertise on the Middle East, and she's good enough to join us right now from Beirut. Thank you so much, Marwa, for taking time to join us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Rick.
So I guess we should probably start. I have a million questions for you. I've been reading a lot of your material. You write some fascinating stuff. I like that column you wrote a couple of weeks ago about how or why the Middle East has or has not been able to come together to speak out on Gaza. And I do want to get to that. But let's start with, you know, the subject at hand, if it will. And that's everything going on right now with NATO and the condition of our president, respectfully, President Biden. What do you make of that? And what do you think the world is making of that?
Well, living at least 8,000 and a half or 9,000 miles away, Rick, we look at what's going on in the United States of America as a complete showdown. And the showdown is not between two contenders. It's actually between the deep state and what we've been seeing since the Cold War, the thing that the regime, the establishment that usually goes up to the people, to the public, and showcases governing or authority, and the deep state that is really in a conundrum at the moment. And it's shown in how much confused they are. They're more confused than Biden himself. What to do with them? Are they going to choose someone else? Are they going to go someone out of the establishment? Are they going to wait and let him lose the elections? And if he loses the elections, if there is an election, we were talking about that earlier, that I personally don't think that there will be elections, but that's only me. I have my reasons to think that.
No, you can't just say that and keep going. What do you mean that there may not be an election? Define.
I'll start with the facts that we have. I think that the DNC does not have really the time at its hand at the moment to change the candidate. And at the same time, they cannot allow Donald Trump to win. He's obviously a convicted felon, but at the same time, he's a person who will facilitate the or accelerate, if you will, the losing factors, the losing variables for the United States of America abroad. I'm talking about resources, I'm talking about imperialism, colonialism, and I'm talking about also the relationship with the European Union and other allies as well, because Trump was very good at breaking those alliances.
Yes.
And added to that, there's also the other factor that's brewing inside of the United States of America on different levels, at the social level, at the economic level, at the level of illegal immigrants, at the level of homelessness, at the level of people are not being able to pay their bills at the end of the month and whatnot. So the U.S. has its own deep problems inside, and it has a lot of problems outside, and they have managed to show us that they cannot manage those problems.
Right.
And what I mean by saying so is, if you look at the Ukraine for the past year and a half, and then you look at the genocide going on in Gaza for the past 10 months, you could probably see clearly that the United States of America, the only thing that it was successful in is to bring out the bombs and deliver to both Ukraine and Israel. But they were not able to bring an end for the genocide, for the humanitarian catastrophe on both sides of the world.
So,
I'm not only talking about Gaza, I'm also talking about Ukraine and Russia.
But almost everything,
all of that.
Okay, what does that have to do with elections or not having elections? Go
exactly.
Ahead.
When we look at all of that, that gives us an idea of how weak and late the DNC is in trying to change Biden or trying to at least maybe push the elections away. They can do either. And because of that, they are not willing to lose the elections, which is why they will go to option two or plan B for that matter. And that is going into emergency status in the United States of America, which gives the sitting president more authority and more time to handle the regime, to handle the establishment, to go on and govern for more, probably two more years, if he's still alive. We don't know, but he's not governing. He's not been governing for the past 2 years to begin with.
Right.
So that would give him at least from 6 months to 2 years. And that is the case that I see. There's also the case that would help calling for an emergency in the United States of America, which is the possible and probable clashes that we might be seeing in the streets of very important states, very important capital states in the United States of America, where people have had it with each other. The fracture, but the division between both camps is so deep restore. To a point that even that fracture will be seen within the authority itself. We have seen sheriffs, we have seen police deputies standing with Trump and saying that whatever happens, he's going to be president. And on the other side, you have people saying the same. That's very risky when it happens at the level directly of the public.
So, but let's follow your enthymeme if we could and try and make it as logical as it, because there is some logic to your enthymeme that the deep state in the United States will make a determination that it's too important to keep Biden in the White House because that way they can control the foreign policy and many of the other things you mentioned. They pull the plug, take the nuclear option, if we can call it that, and say, we're canceling the election. The moment they do that, 50% of the country goes out into the streets, and there will be riots, and there will be disturbances, and there will be all but a civil war. It may be a little bit too much to call it a civil war. At that point, then you have
unrest,
the government saying,
unrest.
Now, because of that situation, now we do have to declare an emergency, a national emergency,
and
there will be
another,
no election. Right?
There's also another scenario. Yeah, and there's another scenario. If we actually go to elections and Trump ends up winning, and then something happens to not allow Trump to get there, or something worse happens, Trump actually wins, but he doesn't get there because the election is rigged. There are a lot of options that can happen to make sure that Trump doesn't get there. And whichever option you take, Rick, it's going to be a catastrophe. I'm not going to call it a civil war, but I'm going to call it a civil unrest.
Now, I totally disagree with your proposition. I think in the end that they will most likely just have Mr. Biden. I think Mr. Obama and Mr. Clinton and Mrs. Clinton and will sit down with Jill Biden and explain to her that she needs to convince her Biden to step down. He will take his delegates and give them back. They will choose a person, maybe George Clooney, maybe Oprah Winfrey, maybe Michelle Obama, maybe the governor of California or the governor of Michigan. And then that person will be trounced out and they'll spend a month getting them to say horrible things about Mr. Trump. And I think that will be the election. At least that's most likely what I think could happen. But none of us know because we're not God and we don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Sure.
But it's a, you know, it's a heck of a thing. I do want to, I'm wondering where you're going personally with this as you describe Mr. Trump. Do you believe, as someone who writes about this and is really smart at looking at U.S. foreign policy, do you believe Mr. Trump's foreign policy will be better at controlling the so-called deep state that Mr. Biden has been?
Well, we've seen how Trump was governing the situation when he won the presidency, and he was actually one of the factors that pushed back the war, that actually delayed the war between Russia and Ukraine. Not the fact that I don't like the man. I'm sorry to say, an American maybe. Viewers watching, but Trump for me is a terrorist because he killed a lot in my area and he killed leaders in the resistance that I believe in and follow. But that aside, when we look at the foreign policy that Trump was taking, it was a more, despite the fact that he was a funny comedic president, but he took a lot of open relationships with China, with Russia, even with NATO, to a point that I saw that it was logical for him to ask NATO to pay as much as the U.S. is paying, because that's only fair.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, NATO is there to protect Europe, and the U.S. is paying more than Europe. So that's logical, but the way that he puts it is usually that not diplomatic and not nice, but that's the thought of it is logical. So when we look at the foreign policy during Trump, it was actually a success compared to the catastrophe that has been happening for the past 4 years, of people who died in Ukraine and in Russia and in Gaza and in Lebanon. And
it is confounding and it is somewhat perplexing because in many ways, for example, he seemed to all but sleep in the same bed with Bibi Netanyahu and let him do whatever the hell he wanted to do, which is troubling from a foreign policy standpoint. And yet on some issues, you're right, but like Ukraine, he was much
genocide
more...
Genocide Joe yeah, did
he,
worse.
He was much more sensible. So, it's a mixed bag. And I don't think you're wrong. I think that's a fair assessment.
People keep saying, Rick, people keep reminding us that during the Trump era, we saw the declaration, the Abraham Accords being signed with a couple of Arab states. But come on, when were there these Arab states ever in a direct contact with the Israeli entity? They always had friendships with the Israeli entity, but they never really were open about it. And they became open about it in when Trump was president. But what Biden did in the matter of 10 months is much, much worse than what Trump did with these accords that were signed. These were just papers that were signed. But what Trump did was send weapons to kill my family, to kill Palestinians, to destroy my house. I've been displaced for the past 10 months, Rick. That's because of the United States of America.
I'm so sorry about that. I'm not responsible, but I feel terrible that you even have to describe that to us. By the way, we're down to a minute, and I read that column you wrote about what the Arab world is going to do about the situation in Gaza. Is the Arab world doing enough? What can it do? We're down to a minute. I'm sorry. I'm going to get you back, and we're going to have this conversation at depth.
No problem.
Please share with me a perspective on what you think about that.
When we say Arab world, we need to define which Arab world are we talking about, the one that is allied to Israel? Or the one that is actually fighting Israel.
Great question.
If we're talking about those allied with Israel, especially those surrounding Palestine, Jordan and Egypt, they are actually protecting the Zionist entity. They're protecting Israel. Wow. They're even protecting Israel diplomatically and militarily. And militarily, we saw that, what happened when Jordan actually used its air defense systems to down the missiles that were coming from Iran to target Israeli entity. But when we talk about the Arab world that is actually fighting Israel, there's Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, and there's Palestine itself. And what we've seen for the past 10 months, Rick, is something that I personally, despite the fact that I believe in those states and what they are doing, it was a surprise for me. It was a surprise to see the USS Eisenhower being hit in the Red Sea. It was a surprise to see Zionist Israel being defeated in South Lebanon to a point that now 20 kilometers away from the border with South Lebanon, there are no settlers anymore. And to see that Hezbollah has gained so much power that Zionist Israel is now really thinking about finding a ceasefire and a solution to end all of these risks at all of these multiple fronts. So yes, the Arab world has done enough, but the Arab regimes will never, they have never and will never do enough for anyone, even their own people.
Marwa Osman, what a delight to talk to you. We're going to get you back and we're going to drill even deeper into a lot of these topics, including Yemen, further look at Hezbollah, what's going on as well inside of the Israeli government. So much to talk about. Thank you so much for taking time to spend some time with us. We appreciate it. And that is our show. Remember, always look outside your own box. Truths, they don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.